In his Oscar acceptance speech for The Sting, director George Roy Hill said, "How could I miss? I had Newman, I had Redford, I had Doherty." The first two are quite obvious, but the third, Marion Doherty, was the woman responsible for giving Redford and Newman those jobs in the first place. Marion Doherty and a handful of other casting directors were the unsung heroes behind many of the most important films ever made, and Tom Donahue pays tribute to her and the casting profession in a new documentary called Casting By. It debuts tonight on HBO. Which is still being broadcast on Time Warner here in New York. And I'm very pleased to welcome Tom Donahue to our show today. Hello.
That actually gives us more viewers, I think, because
there's less channels. You're not competing with Showtime.
Right.
Marion Doherty passed away 2 years ago. Had you met her before she died?
I did. I did a whole weekend of interviews with Marion back in 2007. And then I found out, it was pretty shocking when I found out she passed away. I was on a plane to Los Angeles and I got a Facebook message saying, "I'm so sorry about Marion Doherty." And of course, I kind of knew what had happened, but it wasn't verified until the next morning.
Well, what got you thinking about telling her story and interviewing her?
Growing up, I always loved film since I saw Jaws. And I very much had subscribed to the auteur theory of filmmaking. So I always knew about great directors, but I had no idea of the creative contribution of the casting director. In 2006, in November, I was having coffee at a coffee bean with a friend of mine, Joanna Colbert, who's a casting director. And Joanna had, unbeknownst to me, just gotten off the phone with the executive at Disney that she was casting Step Up with, where they found Channing Tatum. And they realized they had Marion Doherty in common and said, "Oh, someone should do a movie on her. Hey, I'm meeting with a documentary filmmaker for a coffee this week." And so Joanna said, "Tom, you know, I have a project I think we can work on together. Do you know who Marion Doherty is?" And I was very ashamed of my ignorance. And I said, "I have no idea. Let me go back to New York and Yahoo it." And I found one article on Marion Doherty, and that's it.
Really? Only one article?
One article.
She was quite famous.
Within the industry. And I knew there was a major story here that had to get out to the public.
Well, you know, the casting was done pretty well before we had casting directors. The stars of the past, Betty Davis, Barbara Stanwyck, Jimmy Stewart, Humphrey Bogart, Spencer Tracy, they all seemed pretty perfect for the roles they played. But it was a different system?
It was. I mean, the studios each had a kind of movie they made. So Warner Brothers made gangster movies and had gangster types under contract. And they made those movies for those actors.
So George Raft got a lot of work.
Yeah, exactly. And Edgar G. Robinson, you know, kind of always played the same character from movie to movie. But then things changed after in the 50s and 60s, partly due to the emergence of television and also the antitrust lawsuit the government leveled against the studios, where they broke the studios up.
Well, Marion really got her start in TV. But before that, wasn't her first job designing windows at Bergdorf Goodman?
They were. And she specialized in shoes and she did a great job.
So how did she go from that to casting for television shows?
Just had a friend who came up to her, I think, while she was actually designing the window and said, "Hey, have you heard about this new thing called television?" And this was 1947. And Marion said, "Yeah, my aunt has one. I think I saw it this weekend." And there were about 3,000 sets in New York at the time.
And if you were going to do anything casting, it would have to be in TV in those days. Now, New York, a lot of films are being made. In fact, I think we have five studios in Williamsburg, Greenpoint, and Brooklyn alone.
In
Long Island City alone. But the movie industry had pretty much all moved to Hollywood.
Right.
But New York had the advantage for many years of theater.
Yeah, where filmmaking came back in New York, and part of what I think created the new Hollywood was John Lindsay, the mayor of New York, who in 1964 passed legislation to kind of create these incentives for people to come and shoot in New York. And that's when Marion opened her office. So you can credit, actually, the New York City government for allowing that to happen.
But she really began on Kraft Television Theater?
She did in 1947, and did that for 11 years and did 500 shows.
And she found people off-Broadway who she thought were right for the roles?
Basically, there was nowhere to look for actors. Marion had to just go out and find them. You know, there were not that many agents who were giving actors to TV. There was not much TV. And so she went to, and off-Broadway had just started and kind of exploded at that time.
In those days, in fact, movie stars did everything possible to stay off of TV because it was considered a step down.
Right, but Marion thought that the great, most talented actors were actually in theater.
Although Marion Doherty is the main focus of your film, you also talk to some other really important casting directors, especially Lynn Stallmaster. He was referred to as the Marion Doherty of Hollywood.
Yeah, he was. I called him Marion's pioneering counterpart in Hollywood.
Did they have similar approaches to casting a film or a TV show?
They did, and he was very inspired by Marion. You know, a lot of the actors that Marion would put on TV and became known on television in New York would fly to L.A. and want to have careers in L.A., and Lynn would find them, and the Marty Landaus and the Jack Klugmans of the world, and start plugging them into movies in Los Angeles.
People, Martin Landau or Jack Klugman, probably wouldn't have normally gotten jobs in Hollywood films
because
of the way they looked, but they had proved their acting abilities in New York television, so now they had the opportunity?
Yeah, I think they proved that there was an appeal to actors who were a little off-center looking.
In the film, Marion talks about having a gut reaction to certain actors. So was it just a matter of instinct? This is not very scientific.
I don't think it's a matter of just instinct. I actually think having an impeccable memory really, really helps. I think you need to have, and a great casting director has 10,000 actors in their head at any one time and has a great instinct to be able to alchemically combine those actors in their head with those people on the page.
She kept notes on 3x5 cards. So amazing. That she didn't have to keep everything in her head.
4,000.
She went out on a limb for many of her actors. One of the most notable ones, Jimmy Dean.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell that story?
Sure, please.
James Dean came in very hungover and disheveled, and the director was not happy with him coming in late, and he wanted to fire him. And that was Richard Dunlap, the director. And Marion said, just let me talk to him. And brought James Dean into the office. And part of the story I don't tell in the film is that while she was giving him her Dutch uncle talk and lecturing him about being professional, he fell asleep. And she had to wake him up. And she said that
People would have thrown him out of their office at that point.
And he said he had been not drinking all night. He'd been bartending all night. He was very tired. She found out later that it was a drug addiction.
Mm-hmm. But she got him back on the set. And
she was able
that was
to,
the beginning of an incredible career, all too short career.
Exactly.
John Voight is another story along those lines.
That's an amazing story. And, you know, when I interviewed John Voight, I wasn't fully aware of the story. I just knew that she cast him in Midnight Cowboy, and I knew that story. But he came in with a story to tell, and I don't think I asked him one question, and he spoke for about an hour and 15 minutes, getting this story off his chest. It was emotional. And the story is that Marion cast him in the first thing he'd ever done on TV. He'd only been in theater, and he failed miserably, and it's in the film, and it's very funny.
That was in Naked City?
It was in Naked City.
Which she also cast for quite a while.
1962, yeah.
Naked City was one of those pioneering films, shows, wasn't it?
It's an amazing show, and it still holds up today.
Now, why did the Directors Guild object to calling this job casting director?
Because in the 30s through the 50s, everyone at the studios were starting to give themselves the credit of director, set director, art director, production director. There were all these director credits. So the DGA actually formed over this dispute in 1936, the first dispute being with the Cinematographers Guild, who wanted the term director of photography. And the DGA couldn't stop that one. And they also couldn't stop art directors. But they absolutely would not allow anything else. They drew a line in the sand. And so by the time in the 1950s, when the casting director term came up, it was a non-starter. There was no way they were going to get that credit in the main titles.
So is that why you've called your film Casting By?
That is why. It's named after a credit.
My guest is Tom Donahue, whose film Casting By debuts tonight on HBO. And then as HBO's tradition would suggest, we'll be seeing it again and again and again and again.
And it's on demand as well.
What?
It's on demand as well.
So she was doing television. When did she start casting films? Well, you say when John Lindsay opened up New York to filmmaking again?
Well, yes, except she had done a film called The World of Henry Orient, which, yes, started with that incentive and was shot in New York around, I think, 1963 when the incentives happened. That with Peter Sellers, great cast in that.
Who directed that?
That was George Roy Hill.
And she seemed to have a wonderful relationship with him.
They were very, very close.
For the film Hawaii, Marion traveled to Asia for a year looking for actors. That had to have been unusual at the time, and especially since she came up with that famous Asian actress, Bette Midler.
She was there for a year looking for indigenous peoples, and she went everywhere, Tahiti, incredible, Tonga. And then she inadvertently found a superstar named Bette Midler who credits Marion. She basically said, if Marion hadn't given me the money to be in that little part, I never would have had enough to go to New York and start my career.
A Jewish girl from Hawaii playing as an ethnic.
Yeah, while playing a Christian missionary.
Yeah, Christian missionary.
Ethnic for her.
Another amazing story is how Danny Glover got cast as Roger Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon. Why was that controversial?
Because he was black. It basically had never said on the page anything about color. And when Dick Donner, the director, said, "Marion, who do I cast?" She said, "Mel Gibson." He said, "I love that idea. I always wanted to work with Mel. And what about for Murtaugh?" And she said, "What about Danny Glover? Have you seen The Color Purple?" And his response was immediate, "But he's black." And Marion, he said, "Marion came up to me face to face in the only way that Marion can and said, 'What do you mean he's black? So what?'"
Well, your film makes the case, and we can get into any number of other instances of just how important, well, directors will always tell you casting is, 80% of...
Martin Scorsese at the opening of the film says 90%. So I'll listen to him.
She didn't receive any on-screen credit for movies for years and years.
Many years.
Were other people receiving that credit?
No, Lynn Stallmaster got the first credit for The Thomas Crown Affair, and that was given to him just because Norman Jewison was so grateful at the cast he put together in 1968. And then it took Marion another 5 years before she got hers.
Well, you mentioned Midnight Cowboy. She cast that whole film. Every
Marion
part
Doherty,
there is perfect.
Yes, that film would not have been that film.
Dustin Hoffman, was she responsible for getting him in as well as John Voight?
She was. He was playing off-Broadway. She told the producer, Jerome Hellman, to go see Dustin Hoffman off-Broadway.
And was there resistance to these casting suggestions?
Not to Dustin Hoffman. It was pretty immediate when he saw him on stage. But yes, for John Voight, they were locked into and really wanted Michael Sarrazin, and she thought it was wrong.
And John Voight was perfect for that part.
He was amazing for that part.
But he had to beg her to even consider him again because he had so screwed up on Naked City.
Actually didn't have to beg. He just showed up and he said, "Marion, I'm so sorry." And she said, "John, the past is the past." So she knew he was talented.
So why didn't she get credit for that film?
Because she had a dispute. She wanted a single card credit. And she was being, there was a hot-headed conversation between her and producer Jerome Hellman. And he basically said, "You have to have your two assistants shared on the card with you because they did a lot of work too," which is pretty demeaning and insulting to her. And she said, "You know what? If you're going to do that, I don't want my name on the film at all." And he said, "Okay." And that's where they left it.
And then he says on camera for you,
he has a mea culpa.
That's something he's regretted for the rest of his life.
For 45 years, yeah.
When you tell many of the directors and actors that you talk to in the film that there's no award for casting at the Oscars, they're shocked.
It's amazing, right? Jeff Bridges is like, "Really? Are you sure?" Oliver Stone didn't believe us.
The Emmys include an award for casting.
They do. They include 4 awards for casting. The SAG Awards has a casting award. The Independent Spirit Awards have a casting award.
Well, didn't the Academy's Board of Governors approve the creation of a casting director's branch just last week?
They did.
So you think that means that we'll be seeing an Oscar awarded in the category sometime in the near future?
Marion Doherty told me before she passed away that it's inevitable that there will be a casting Oscar, not in her lifetime, and it's proven correct. I think in the next 2 years you'll see an Oscar category.
Now, your film, you could have never put together a cast like this for a feature film. Everybody wanted to talk about the casting directors?
Everyone did, but I also have to credit my genius producer, Kate Lacey, who was doggedly determined and never took no for an answer. And it took years to get Bette Midler, 3.5 years to get her on screen. Clint Eastwood took 2.5 years.
So she functioned in a way like a casting director for a documentary.
She did, and she was a casting executive at Disney for 7 years. So that was her thing, was putting together talent packages, yeah.
Many of the people that you interviewed were part of a letter-writing campaign to get Marion Doherty an honorary Oscar in 1991. Why was that unsuccessful?
A lot of people write a lot of letters for people every year. There could be, I don't know how many people in contention every year and I think Satyajit Ray ultimately got it. So it's not that, we're not going to give one to Marion Doherty. It's just that she was way down on the list, and she didn't get the award that year, and it wasn't reapplied for the year later. But Marion Doherty and Lynn Stallmaster certainly deserve Oscars, as does Julia Taylor and so many of the great casting directors that are still working today.
Well, Julia Taylor comes out of Marion Doherty's office. What happens is they have created a whole new career in the movie business.
They did.
How did Marion Doherty's career end?
Not well. She wasn't told that she was going to be kind of let go by Warner Brothers. She found out in the trade magazine announcement in Variety. but she did kind of see the writing on the wall. She wasn't happy with the way films were going, with the way scripts were very weak. And she was being forced to cast a lot of TV actors in the lead for movies, and she didn't think they were doing a good job in the lead.
Well, now, wouldn't she just be casting somebody who is an explosives expert?
There are still amazing roles to cast for casting directors. If you look at Laura Kennedy and what she did for Argo, or Evie Kaufman did for Lincoln, I mean, you can't deny the power of the casting director.
You had many of the people in the film record messages to Marion that run during the credits. It's
very
quite
emotional.
A moving thing.
And that's before she passed away. That's just how they feel about her. Clint Eastwood tears up a little.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask him to. They love this woman. I can't say enough how much people care about her.
Well, there's also an awful lot of gossip in the film. We find out why Clint Eastwood turned down certain roles, what Woody Allen thought about certain people. You spoke to them all?
Yeah, I spoke to – it was an amazing experience. Woody Allen gave us an hour, and he was just – I feel like I had to – I interviewed 240 people.
I would think that Woody Allen doesn't need a casting director. He just simply calls up anybody he wants and says, I'm making another movie. That's the way it seems
to work. Out of everyone that I interviewed in the film, every director, Woody Allen is the most in need of a casting director, that I can tell you. He would cast the first person who walked through the door. That's what he told me. So.
Oh, gee, I'm going to go visit his office. Tom Donahue's.
We'll get you on the next one.
Tom Donahue's film casting by... debuts tonight on HBO. It'll also be available on demand, as you point out.
Thank you, Leonard.
And my great thanks to you for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Congratulations for putting together the most all-star cast I think I've ever seen in a documentary.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.